All right, guys, welcome to today's episode of How to Get Into Investment Banking. So today is going to be all about the investment banking career path and the hierarchy, which is, lucky for you, it's extremely well-defined, hasn't changed much over time. And I love that. I love structure, right? So this video, what you're going to get out of it is, hey, the path, which is, just to be clear, summer analyst, analyst, associate VP, director, executive director, MDs, and then you have your partners, you have group heads, you have head of investment banking, and then you have your global heads, right? And then also, guys, this is the part two to the part one episode. So part one should be linked below. So if you missed that, watch that and then watch this. But again, getting back to this, look, so there are different variations and slightly different titles, but that is pretty much the basic career path, right? And then you die. Now, in all seriousness, that is a path, easier said than done. But let's get right into it. I want to talk about what investment banking analysts actually do. I want to go through age range and salaries, promotion times, exit opportunities, and all of that. The one thing that I would like to caveat and say is that, like I've mentioned many times, is that I am extremely biased about the career. I love my time in banking. I learned a lot. I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of people on YouTube who come on, they work in banking for like 2 minutes, and then they start talking shit about the career. And the irony is that they're making money on YouTube because they worked in investment banking, and now they're able to talk shit about it. So that's just kind of weird to me. But again, I'm going to focus on what you actually do on the job and why I think it's so great. So let's kind of dive right into it, right? So obviously, as an analyst, at a high level, you're probably thinking, okay, hey, I know I'm aware of the fact that, hey, I'm in charge of the Excel, the PowerPoint. Yes, that's great, but there are a lot more nuances to that, right? You're going to be managing a lot of databases. So what that means is, and yes, things are a lot more automated now, but you still have to do QC or quality control, quality checks at a manual level. And what is managing a database? What does that mean? So very clearly what that is that you might have a database of prior transactions that are done in a specific sector, right? Within that database, you might have, a comps database, which means that, hey, what are comparable companies in this sector or in this industry? What are they worth, right? And you might have a list of 20 companies that your group tracks, right? Because maybe your client is in that space, or these are the companies that you advise on a regular basis, right? You're going to be managing buyer and seller lists, right? And you're going to be managing data rooms. You're going to be managing flow of documents that are coming. You're going to be tracking all of that, right? Maybe in something, meeting minutes, calendar invites, right? There is a lot of grunt work and administrative work. And I'm not even talking about, whether if you work on a profile or a one pager, you're writing up, you're managing the tombstones for the pitch books. Tombstones, all it is in the back of a pitch book. You'll have little squares it'll have like a logo of a company that your bank may have advised. And it'll be like, hey, Goldman advised, Apple on raising $100 million. In whatever, right? In a new bond issuance or equity offering, whatever the case is, right? It'll have the date, whatever. So it'll be your job to manage and update tombstones, manage and update team bios, things like that. And again, a lot of this stuff does get templated, but templates also need to get updated time to time, right? So again, yes, you're in charge of Excel and PowerPoint work, but what does that actually truly mean, right? What does that PowerPoint work consist of? So yes, there's a lot of stuff that's not really fun, like I just went through, but then there is fun stuff. And something that I'll mention right here is that a lot of this grunt work that you do as an analyst, you might hate it in the moment, but you won't appreciate it till you're an associate or a VP. And what I mean by that is something that will happen every day in investment banking is you'll go into the office of your VP or the staffer, you'll go in with your associate, and the VP will start talking about a proposed transaction that he wants to pitch, or the MD wants to pitch to a client. He'll take out a piece of paper. He might draw something up like, hey guys, let's sketch this out. Let's do this rough analysis to show that if we do this merger for this company, it'll be accretive in this way. And, free cash flow will go up this way, whatever. And they'll draw something on a piece of paper. And then it's going to be your job as an analyst and associate to go back. You'll sit down and you're like, okay, well, how do we take this drawing on a piece of paper and create it in Excel, right? And then how do we create some sort of output, a few pages in PowerPoint, right, to give to the VP to review? That might annoy the crap out of you, but as you get older, you'll realize how valuable that skill set is to be able to take an idea that a managing director or even you as a director or VP want to pitch, and like, hey, how do we create an analysis de novo, brand new, that explains this proposition and explains what it is in terms of a solution that we want to offer our client, right? And you can't just wake up as a 30-year-old one day when you're working in banking and think you're just going to have that skill set of knowing how to create outputs, how to tell a story, how to do an analysis. It takes years of work. And that's why I do think working in banking or PE, it is a type of an apprenticeship type of career where you have to see how other people are doing things. You have to see why they're doing things, why there's certain nuances to structuring certain deals and what have you. So I think that's something that you might not appreciate as an analyst, but I'm telling you, as you get older, it's really important to be able to say, how do we take our ideas and really truncate them to, you know, to something that really matters and explain it in a way to be like, hey, this is why you should do this deal, right? So again, that's a little bit about the kind of the behind the scenes of the Excel and the PowerPoint work, is you just hear that, but you don't actually know what you're doing, right? Like, what are you specifically doing than PowerPoint and Excel? And that's an example. And maybe let me flesh it out a little bit more. That, you know, you draw something up on a piece of paper, your VP does that, then you guys go into the Excel, maybe you have a template, maybe you don't, maybe you need to update it. You'll kind of create the analysis in Excel. You'll use your color palettes. Color palette is literally just the color themes of the bank. You'll make it look pretty, put it in a PowerPoint. Maybe you need to make some graphs done. Either you do them yourself, or most teams and banks have graphics departments. They'll do that. Maybe you'll get some research. You'll pull it. You know, a lot of people do have offshore stuff, so you can offshore teams where you can get some research and then you clean it up, work on the language. Like I said, first episode, grammar, language is really important. So while you can get, you know, your teams in India, your back office team in India to do some of the research heavy lifting for you, you can't just copy and paste it, right? You do kind of have to massage it a little bit, make it specific to the client, only use relevant things, right? So for example, you know, you might be trying to pitch an IPO to a client. So you might have a page like and it'll just be filled with like three or four quotes, and maybe the slide or the point of the slide is like, hey, you know, why is it a good time for you to go public or something like that, or to raise equity or have a debt offering? And then you'll maybe have like a few quotes from like market analysts saying like, oh, this is a great time for companies in, you know, the manufacturing space to raise debt or whatever. And then on the next slide, you might have like an output that shows like comparable companies in the sector that your client's in and where they raised debt at and what were the issuances, what were the yields, and what were the terms of the debt that was issued, right? So that's kind of an example of like your VP would draw that. You'd go to Excel and kind of do all the kind of break it out to be like, hey, if we raise debt, this is what the capital structure looks like. This is the impact on cash flow, whatever. This might be the impact on our stock price, whatever. Next page, you might have some quotes from like market analysts, whatever. And then the following page, you might have either a graph with like a numbers at the bottom of like, hey, you know, who are people in the space right now that have raised money and what does that look like? So that's an example. And hopefully that's the type of detail that, you know, I like providing, is because a lot of people come on here and be like, yeah, you work in Excel and PowerPoint, but it's like, hey, give me a specific example. And that is literally what you would be doing day in, day out. And that's kind of what the output would look like, right? And so anyway, now we're at the 8-minute mark, and I try to keep these under 12 minutes. So in order, kind of the hit list: age range, analyst salary and bonus, analyst hours, promotion time, analyst exit opportunities, right? So most analysts, I was 21, I was younger, right? Just because I started, I was ahead. But most folks are, I'd say, between 22, 27. Salaries, fun fact, when I joined as an analyst, long time ago, our bases were 70K. Now, that year, people started seeing bumps. So they did bump us up our second year to 90 or 95. I don't remember. But when I was an analyst salaries were 70K. They weren't the 100 or 105 they are now. And then obviously bonuses are still always, you know, half of, 0.5 multiple or 1X or maybe 1.5, depending on how well the group did or what the firm's culture usually is and how they like to compensate their folks. So all in, if you do the math on that, that's about 150 to 250 all in for A1, A2, A3, right? Maybe an A3, you'd definitely be closer to the 250 mark, if not more. I did want to talk about hours, big thing. Compared to then and now, the new working lifestyles, I'd say my analyst class, like I'd say that 2012 to 2015, I'd say 2012 to 2016 was like the last analyst era where we worked like Monday through Saturday. We didn't have protected Saturdays, were not a thing, right? And again, I never complained about the work because I knew what I was getting myself into. I loved what I did. I got into it for the right reasons. I wanted the experience, yada, yada, yada. We get it. So I didn't really look at it as hours being worked. I was like, hey, it is what it is. That's just kind of what I have to do, right? Nowadays, I'd say it's definitely 70, 85 hours. I mean, some places definitely will work you 100, 90 to 100. The difference is now is that you definitely have protected Saturdays. You might, you know, you'll have that downtime. Protected Saturdays means that Friday, I don't know, some places it's like 8 or 9 p.m., pencils down unless there's something urgent. And then Saturday, you need to get approval from a group head or a partner, whatever the case is. Again, things vary bank to bank. And again, if you're in a live deal, yes, you will be working on a Saturday. That's just what it is, right? And I'm going to explain that. Because while you're in the office 70 to 90 hours, there is a lot of downtime. But I'm going to make another video to kind of help explain the ebbs and flows of the day. Because a lot of people don't get that. When I tell people, like, oh, I work 90 hours, like, what? They're like, wait, you're just in Excel or PowerPoint or Word and Outlook and meetings like for 90 hours? And I'm like, yeah, maybe on a live deal sometimes, yes. But most of the times, I was there for 90 hours. Doesn't mean I was working for 90 hours, right? There's a lot of ebbs and flows. So definitely we'll explain that in another video of like, hey, why is the day, why is the downtime and the day so vast, right? What actually happens in a day when you're an analyst, right? So again, to recap that, 70 to 90 hours, you should expect that. Again, now things are a little bit better. You do have protected Saturdays and what have you, but you know, it is what it is. And this transitions kind of very nicely to when I talk about what I want to talk about is the career path. And when you want to think about promotions, next steps, exit opportunities, back when I was an analyst, then and now, again, I like doing the then and now because it's easy to kind of demarcate that. So back then, yes, you know, you were A1, A2, A3, analyst 1, 2, 3. And then after, you had to be an analyst for 3 years and then you'd get an associate. Now what the banks want to do is obviously they want to incentivize analysts to stay longer. So like, hey, we'll promote you to an associate, you know, after 2 years, if you perform well. And then, so, you know, you're analyst for 2 years or 3 years, and then you get promoted to associate one, or you leave the industry. Now, before I talk about those exit opportunities, let me stay focused on, the A to A promote, right? My opinion, it's better to stay as an analyst for the full three years, because when you become an associate, the job changes completely, right? Rules and responsibilities are totally different. And when you're an analyst, again, your expectations matter, perception matters. So if you're an analyst 3, yes, you might be getting treated as an associate. At the end of the day, you're still an analyst 3, right? And I think there is something to be said about having that extra year to kind of grow into an associate role versus jumping to an associate right away, because there just might not be nuances and you still might be too green, right? Because once you become an associate, I think associate is a very tricky job. I think a lot of people say VPs have the toughest job, but I think new associates have it equally bad, because you have to tread the line of like, are you competent from a technical perspective, from a modeling perspective, where you're not going to have time to like tear up a model. Maybe sometimes you may have to, but you're going to just have to know how the model works so you can quickly look at things and be like, you know what? This doesn't make sense. These numbers look right. These outputs don't make sense, because you're going to be spending so much more time in meetings and have you, because as an associate, they see you as a long-term partner, right? Hey, you're going to help us with staffing, recruiting, and building the franchise. So we're going to invest time with you to, hey, meet with clients and do more external facing things that you didn't do as an analyst, right? So something to think about is that I do think it's worth to stay on as a third-year analyst before becoming an associate. So there's that. Now, famed exit opportunities, right? Everyone talks about this. It's like, hey, you know, as an analyst at a large bank, yes, you're going to have access to the full suite of exit opportunities, right? Private equity, hedge funds, asset management roles, at larger asset management companies, corporate finance, corporate development, venture capital. It's that point I said earlier, right? And I think this was in episode 1, is that when you have, even at coming from a smaller bank, if you have investment banking and private equity for several years on your resume, there will be a certain level of expectations. People will expect that you will be talented and you're good at what you do. And the example that I don't want to get lost in, because I know we're coming up and on time and going to wrap this episode up here, is the reason why I love the career so much is I truly believe that if you work in IB, you can do whatever the fuck you want after your 2-3 years, right? Whether you stay on as an associate or whatever, I think you can do literally whatever you want, right? Let's say, for example, you're really into media and entertainment, you're really into sports, whatever. There are so many people who work for the NFL, the MLS, you know, whatever, Live Nation, Endeavor, WME, you name it. All these like cool companies and cool verticals and cool sports, their finance and corporate strategy teams are filled to the brim with ex-bankers, right? And you will come in into those roles at a higher level than had you joined the company directly. So very clearly what that means is, let's say you love football, right? And you're a finance major. If you tried to get a job at the NFL right after college, you might come in as some like finance analyst or something. I don't, you know, something like that. Now, whereas if you were in banking for 2 years and then you go to the NFL, you're 100% going to be joining the NFL as like a finance manager or, you know, manager in corporate dev or whatever the case is, right? And I'm just using the NFL as an example, because just go on LinkedIn, type in NFL, finance, investment banking, and go look at the profiles of these people. And I'm going to cover this in another episode about like looking people up and trying to understand different paths people took and how you can emulate that. So, but again, I want to leave that there, guys. I really hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And again, what you need to take away from this is that the investment banking analyst job will amplify and kickstart your career path to put you in a position to do whatever it is that you want after 2-3, you know, after 2 to 5 years. I'd say if you start out as an analyst, you definitely want to be in the role for at least 2 years to really get the full benefit of it. And I don't think you should leave front office unless you've done front office work for at least 3 years. I think it takes 2 to 5 years to get that skill set where then you can move on, leverage your experience to go to a bigger platform or what have you. So anyway, if you like this episode, guys, as much as I like making it for you, please share it to your friends. Oh, and download the book. It's free. I wish I had that book when I was in college. And I will see you guys on the next episode. Peace.